and welcome to episode 5 of the NRL Fantasy Amateurs. My name's Mark. I'm here with Ryan. Ryan, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, Mark. How are you, mate?
My lawyer says I don't have to answer that question. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to go through the most owned players in NRL Fantasy. So the criteria that we're going to be using is anybody that's owned by 10% or more of the teams that are currently been built. So it's the 6th of February today, so there's still a lot more teams that'll get made. But this gives us a pretty good idea of where owners are heading with their teams. So the first player that I want to have a look at with you, Ryan, is Josh Schuster. So Josh Schuster comes in at 274K, owned by about 10.3% of teams with a break even of 20. So Ryan, I guess the first point of this is, are we actually thinking that Josh Schuster is going to be starting in round one?
Look, I mean, I suppose it's a possibility. We know that Manly's shorter actual hooker. There's been a lot of talk of Kieran Foran starting at hooker this year. Outside of that, I'm not too sure. Obviously, a lot of fantasy coaches believe he is.
So what I saw was that they basically guaranteed that Foran was going to be the 5-8. So there's a spot at hooker, and this is a spot in the number 14, realistically. But in that, Cust and Croker were sort of playing there last year. I'm wondering whether it's possible that Schuster ends up in that number 14 jersey. It's going to cause some headaches for coaches that have got him. Particularly, I've seen some teams that have him as a starting half.
Yeah, I mean, he is quite a big body for such a young kid. I know in the under-19 state of origin, he actually played second row for New South Wales. So
okay.
Maybe that is a possibility, but yeah, he is also quite young. He's only 19. He's obviously still got a lot of growing to do. I don't know if Dez would be keen to chuck such a young kid into such a big role early on. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's definitely something to keep an eye on heading towards the trials, which are coming up. So I think Manly is one of the first teams to actually play their trial. But basically what we're going to be looking for with Manly is what are they looking to do with Schuster? Because if he's coming off the bench, it's not necessarily something that you want to invest your 274K in. Now, that being said, there is going to be an inevitable injury to Kieran Foran at some point through the year. So theoretically, you could pick up Schuster, slap him in your emergencies and wait for Kieran Foran to get injured. But, you know, that seems to me like a bit of a waste of a money-making opportunity when there's a lot of guys that seem to have better role or more clearly defined roles going into round one. Do you have anything to add to that?
No. I agree. There's, you know, we don't have a whole lot of info still on Schuster, unfortunately.
So the second player on this list, and it was somebody that surprised me, is actually Zach Lomax at 627K. So obviously we know Lomax had an awesome season last year, averaged about 47 points, but he comes into the year priced at that 47. Obviously Lomax was scoring tries and kicking goals and all that sort of stuff, but do we honestly think that there's any chance of him improving on that 47 average?
Oh, look, as someone who missed him last year, it gives me nightmares just looking at his face. But I have a hard time believing he will, especially with the expected outlook of the Dragons in 2021. It seemed like last year Lomax was scoring a lot of tries. Yeah, I'm not too sure. I don't see the Dragons improving a whole lot. What's your take?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think that the best case scenario for Lomax is that he matches what he did last year at centre, which is a 46-point-something% average, and he's already priced at that. So, you know, I'd be looking at Lomax and saying he's a upgrade to target later, but definitely not somebody that I'd be looking at for round one. Likewise, the next person on our list, Payne Haas, is in a similar sort of boat. So he came in off a season average of 72 points last year. He was just playing absolutely massive minutes. The Broncos were just decimated and he was basically just carrying them along straight all the way through the season to the wooden spoon. So they've had a coaching change. Kevvy Walters has come in and said, look, Payne Haas is playing too many minutes. I think he's only going to be able to play, or I only want him to play 60-odd minutes. And having a look at his scoring from last year, in games where he played less than 70 minutes, his average was 67 points in 63 minutes. So being that he's priced at 72, we know he's going to play about 60 minutes. He averaged 67. That's a 5-point decrease on where he's currently priced. 10.5% of people have seen some value in Payne Haas. What's your, I mean, is there any value in starting with a guy who's going to lose 5 points worth of money straight away?
Well, I think just in the definition you laid out there, obviously not. neither of us started with him last year either, which is we were considered heretics last year. Everybody had asked to start the year. There's also a big cloud hanging over him. We expect he's going to be suspended for the first few rounds of the year, which puts a pretty, you know, even bigger dent in his starting stocks. He's one I'd be looking at.
Absolutely. And I mean, the ideal scenario for us is Haas cops a suspension for a couple of weeks. We get a starter in like a Matt Lodge or a John Asiata for 4 or 5 weeks. And then Haas comes back, starts playing his 60 minutes, drops cash down to, you know, he's still going to be 900K, averaging 65. And then we upgrade to him from somebody else, you know, after state of origin period would be sort of my idea of the best case scenario for Haas. I'm absolutely going to want him by the end of the season because he's going to be a top three mid, but certainly not going to, you know, start with him round one, likely suspended. But even if he's not, even if you just take the suspension out of it, he's still not really a smart decision for 10.5% of coaches there. So the next one on the list is Jason Saab, 246K cash cow winger, looking like he may nab the left wing spot of George Tafua. So he's owned by 10.5% of teams as well with a break even of 18. What are you seeing in Saab?
Yeah, he's one we briefly discussed in our team analysis when we were looking at them early on. I sort of likened him to, in his scoring last year, to Hamiso Fideau, in that he's got this ability to pump out an 8 in 80 minutes, but at the same time, if he can, you know, easily give you a 30 as well with a few tackle breaks or a try or something like that. So for a winger priced at 18, you usually know what you're going to get. Usually these guys are mostly the same. You're going to be relying on tries for them to really boost their price. I don't think you want more than one or two of these guys in your 21. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I had a look at his fantasy stats from Q Cup, and his Q Cup average is 31, or New South Wales Cup, Q Cup, same thing. The only real benefit that I can see is Tom Trbojevic coming back this year. He loves to play to that left side wing. So Saab comes in, he's fresh, he's a big body, he's young, he's a try scorer, and Tommy's just feeding him tries down that left wing. But even then, I think the upside, unless he's going to get some base stats, is probably about 30. I would be more inclined to go with the guy that we're going to talk about later in Bailey Simonson's personally. So the next one, so this is the fifth guy on our list, and he's owned by 10.8% of teams, is Roger Tuivasa-Sheck at 626K. Break even of 47, and you might have noticed if you're keeping up with us on social media that we put up a pretty interesting stat on Roger Tuivasa-Sheck earlier in the week. And that is that when the Warriors lost by 7 or more points in 2020, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's fantasy scores were an average of 35.3. However, when the Warriors were in a tight game, so they lost by 6 points or less or managed to win the game, his average boosted all the way up to 66 points. So that's a 30-point gap between his best case and worst case scenario. So based on those stats, it really just becomes a question of how do you see the Warriors season going? And what I did as a little bit of an exercise is I looked at the team that came 8th last year and the team that came 12th last year, just to sort of get a bit of a guide, because realistically, I think that's probably the range for the Warriors, is just scraping into the 8 from there down to sort of, 12th or 13th. And what I've worked out is basically it was a 2/3, 1/3 split in terms of good games versus bad games if they were to make the 8, because, you know, typically the team in 8th is just over 50% winning record, but they're also going to lose a couple of close games. Whereas I found the 12th place team, which was the Dragons last year, went for 11-9. So it was basically just over 50-50. So the change in that projection is basically whether he's going to average 55 or 52, which 52 is still pretty good considering he's priced at 47. So I mean, I can understand why some teams have chosen to go in that direction, but, you know, where do you see the Warriors and Roger this year, right?
Yeah, Roger's obviously an exciting player. I can see why anyone would want to start with him. He's absolutely lightning, and it's a shame he's going to be leaving the NRL at the end of the year. But, I mean, the Warriors were outstanding in the back end of last year. Top eight and had them playing really well. They've got a lot of, big names back, a lot of their middles back last year that were injured. Do you think Nathan Brown and Gus Gould can get them playing to the level of that top eight had them last year? I'd be willing to bet on Gus. Nathan Brown gives me a little bit of pause.
Yeah, the short answer to that question for me is no. I don't have a lot of confidence in Nathan Brown. I don't have a lot of confidence in the Warriors. They've added Ben Murdoch-Masila and Adam Fanua-Blake, but you know they were playing really, really well last year and playing for each other, playing for their families, playing for their country. Everyone in Australia was behind them with the fact that they came over and stayed over here, that, you know, they lost some players, but they were the epitome of playing with heart. And I just don't necessarily know if that can span two seasons. And I don't have a huge amount of confidence, which is why I looked at the 12th place. So I've got him projected to get, you know, to get a 5-point bump on his average from last year and average 52. But I don't see enough value there for me to go for him, as opposed to a guy like, you know, say Valentine Holmes, who has a chance of averaging 52 as well, except he's only 498K instead of 626. The next player on the list here, I'll be honest, I'm confused by, and that's Jack Hetherington. He's owned by 11.1% of teams. And, you know, we're in the fantasy group on Facebook, NRL Fantasy Talk, and there seems to be a lot of people in there investing in Hetherington. And, you know, yes, Luke Thompson's out, and yes, Aiden Tolman is gone. Jack Hetherington, I'll absolutely be willing to concede that he's probably going to get a starting front row role, at least for the first 4 weeks, if not, you know, indefinitely. But Ryan, have you ever seen a prop average 30 points in 55 minutes?
That sounds like a rarity to me. I reckon you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone else close to that.
Because that's what he usually did in six starts last year. He had six starts over 40 minutes. And in that time, yeah, he averaged 30 points in 55 minutes.
Yeah, he doesn't exactly fill me with confidence, especially looking at his starts last year. Like, he had an 80-minute game where he scored 48, a 70-minute game where he scored 29. Yeah, pretty sad reading.
It's an absolute nightmare. And honestly, what's the upside? You know, 55 minutes is probably around where his ceiling is in terms of minutes. And that's only a 6-point bump on his break even. That's your absolute best case scenario. If he gets 40 minutes, there's a chance he might not make any money from 322K. You know, I just don't, it defies belief to me that 11.1% of teams would want to put him in there. And, you know, I just think if for 322K, you could get Connor Watson. It's just not, you know, it doesn't really add up. And obviously Watson's ownership's a lot higher, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, but you know, just Hetherington, I'm just not seeing it. All I'm seeing is downside. And I guess speaking of confusion, the next person on my list, I am admittedly very confused about, which is Joshua Cook for the Rabbitohs. He's their, you know, I guess development hooker behind Damien Cook. Do you reckon maybe people have just seen a green Rabbitohs jersey and the last name Cook and thought, oh, he's pretty cheap at 228K.
Yeah, Cook for only 228K. What a bargain.
Woohoo, I'm in. But in all seriousness, what I think's happened here is people are going, oh, yeah, I need a placeholder guy at 228K. And there's a couple of other guys in this list, so I'm not going to repeat myself a couple of times through this. I'm just going to say this once. If you're going for a placeholder guy in your emergency spot, and, you know, I can absolutely understand doing that. We don't know who's going to be the cash cows come team list Tuesday. It makes sense to put guys in there that are, you know, cheapies to, and then sort of working around to put in the right ones on TLT. But it doesn't make any sense to do that with the 228K guys. And I know that, you know, when you're posting your team for everybody to look at, having 228K guys in your emergencies and saying they're placeholders gives you an extra 65K to spend on your guns through your 17. But the reality is you're not going to have that 65K come Teamless Tuesday when there are only four guys that are 246K that are starting is, you know, your Simerson, Fee Guy, Bloor and Stefano from the Tigers. And then you know, you've got to somehow go back and scrape 65K out of your team, you're much better off putting four 246K guys in there and planning that way so that you're not scrambling in the 2 days leading up to kickoff after Teamless Tuesday coming up. Does that make sense to you, Ryan?
Yeah, perfect sense. It's good advice.
Yeah. So, and I understand there's lots of new people around and hopefully we can teach you a little bit about it. And this is just one of those really sort of basic things is when you're constructing your team, the last thing that you want to be doing is TLT comes out, none of the players that you're buying have been named and you're scrambling and rushing and whatever. You want to do all your research beforehand so that Teamless Tuesday comes out and you're calm and you might have to swap one or two cash cows around. But other than that, it's all sweet. That's what you're wanting to do. So the 11.4% of you that have Josh Cook and the 14% of you that have Ben Trbojevic and the 19.3% of you that have Sam Walker, take him out of your team, put a 246K guy in there instead. Speaking of Sam Walker, actually, there's the next guy on our list is the guy who's actually going to be in that Roosters number 7 jersey, and that's Lachlan Lamb. So Lachlan Lamb is owned by 12.1% of teams, 446K, giving him a break even of 33. Ryan, I love Lachlan Lamb. And I think when we went through our teams originally, I was not that excited about him. But admittedly, that was probably due to a lack of research on my part. So I've actually gone back, had a look at Lachlan Lamb. And what I found was in reserve grade, he managed to average 42 points with only 120 kick meters.
Yeah, that's exciting. I've been waiting for you to give me the hard sell because I know you changed your opinion in between our podcasts and he's one you're particularly high on now. Obviously, we've only got a small sample size in the NRL with only one 80-minute performance. Mind you, it was a very good 80-minute performance. It did feature nearly 400 kick meters, however. Yeah, we've talked about how reserve grade averages tend to give a good guide as to what a player can do in the NRL. So if he can put up a 40 plus point average with minimal kick meters, it makes him pretty exciting in a team that should be a good again in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, typically speaking, what you find is with Luke Keary, he does somewhere between 150 and 200 kick meters a game. So what we can expect from Lamb is he's going to fill at least, I've got him down for 220 up from 120. So I'm not giving him a massive bump. I'm only giving him a 5-point bump on his kick meters. The reality is he might end up kicking for 300 kick meters or 400 kick meters if it all works out, and then that's just a bonus. But so you take the 42 average with 120 kick meters, bump him up to 220 kick meters, and you're getting an average of 47 there, plus he would be their sort of second choice goal kicker behind Taukeiaho. So if Taukeiaho is playing 60, 65 minutes and Lamb's playing the other 20, there's a good chance that he's going to be able to kick sort of 1 to 2 goals a game based on how the Roosters go. He could be nudging 50 by the end of the season. So the next guy on our list is Damien Cook. So Damien Cook comes in at 856K with a break-even of 64 and currently owned by 12.2% of teams. Now, I've actually done the opposite of what I did with Lamb with Damien Cook, and I'm actually not that excited about Cook anymore. And part of the reason for that is I looked at his stats from 2018, 2019, and 2020. And across those three seasons, he averaged between 64 and 65 points all three of those years.
So, are you saying his average always finished up the same at the end of each year?
Yeah, it was 64.1, 64.3, and 64.9 or something.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting stat. It definitely shows Cook's consistency, but with that consistency comes probably little value going into this year. Price at 64. We know scoring did get a bit of a bump last year with the addition of the new rules.
He still managed to average 64, though. This is the thing that I found was quite interesting is even though the rules changed and he theoretically should have had more opportunities, he didn't.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good point. It's one I probably won't be starting with, but yeah, he's a player, like we discussed in our Souths run through, he did have those few games with, very few attacking stats. Maybe there might be 1 or 2 points of value there, but probably not enough to justify starting with.
Sure. And I mean, that's true. But the, I guess the reverse of that is Cook's an 80-minute performer. He also plays State of Origin. Origin happens mid-year, again this year now. And there is a chance that he could, you know, pick up a niggle during the course of the year because he does play such big minutes, and happen the exact same thing that happened last year is going to happen again this year. You know, that's the, I guess, the reverse of that. So Cook's always been somebody for me that I think he's absolutely somebody that you want in your team come the business end. But I don't feel he's an essential start. There is a guy here that's next on the list who I'm confused for a different reason. And my confusion with this one is why so many teams don't have him. And that's Bailey Simonson. So Bailey Simonson, 246K, only owned by 12.6% of teams. Pretty much guaranteed that edge, sort of the left edge wing spot there for the Raiders. And having a look at his 16 starts on the wing so far, he's averaged 29, not to mention, obviously, he's going to grow into his body and cement that role and get a bit of consistency, being able to build partnerships and things like that. So, you know, worst case scenario here, he's going to average 30-odd and give you your 10-point cash cow bump sitting in your number 21, covering your wing fullback. I wonder why his ownership's so low.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Maybe people are just opting to go with those 228K guys that we discussed earlier on, and they're not putting cash cows in their team right now. I'm not too sure. Like, we've seen photos of him out of, you know, Raiders training camp, and he's looking very swole going into this year. He's looking pretty beefy.
Yeah, he's obviously been doing the preseason training with Bronson Cherry. I don't think we need to even talk that much more on Simonson. He seems like a slam dunk. Everybody that's got your 228K guys there, there's a perfect one. That's one of the guys you need to plug into your team, Bailey Simonson, if you don't have him already. Next guy on our list, Latrell Mitchell, 493K, owned by 12.9% of teams. So he comes in with a break-even of 37. Now, last year, Latrell played a fair bit of fullback, so he gives us a really nice sample size. And he actually only averaged 41 at fullback when you exclude any of the goal kicking and also exclude the 10-point game that he did in week one. So I'm being pretty generous to the troll there, not leaving that 10-point game in there. But he's only averaged 4 points more than what his break-even last year. Can you see any sort of reason why teams would want to opt for Latrell?
Obviously, he is a gun in years past when he was at the Roosters playing center. But yeah, looking at his fullback stats,
I think that was the
stats,
key, really, was the center, and which he's not available.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that was really handy when he had that dual position. I mean, at fullback, he only averages 108 run meters per game. His base stats are low for a fullback. He's someone that relies heavily on attacking stats through try assists and tries. And obviously, he's a big, strong guy, so he needs to get the odd tackle break and push people off as well. But I don't know if I want to be relying on a guy that needs a try every week just to get to 40.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big thing for him is he's inconsistent. And you can take inconsistency at 246K with a guy like Bailey Simonson, but the last thing that you want when you're paying 500K for a guy is not knowing if he's going to score 12 points in the game or 27, or and you're sitting there praying he gets to 50, which is, at that point, you sort of should be looking at that going, do I really need to pay 493K to get a guy that scores this way?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like, that inconsistency is also something you can take when you've got a center as well. You know, last year we were all struggling for centers. It's a position you're willing to accept a little bit of mediocrity from when the average price for the average score for a gun is, you know, around that 40 to mid 40. But wing fullback range, you're really looking for 50 plus, and I don't know if he's got that long-term average in him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you're looking for a guy who's going to average low 40s, Will Hopewadi's 100K cheaper than Latrell. You know, that's an easy way to free up 100K to upgrade somewhere. And you're pretty much going to be getting identical scoring, similar downside, similar upside. You're just paying 100K less if that's what you're looking for. Plus, Hopper actually has the dual position to go into center as well. So, you know, there's something there. That's a nice little pod tip for everybody out there. So I think Hopper's only about 2.5% of teams. So he's definitely, if that's what you're looking for and you've got Latrell, you're listening to this going, wow, Mark and Ryan, you're so smart. Down to Hopper, extra 100K. Next guy on our list, though, I wouldn't begrudge anybody for having in their team, and that is Angus Crouton. So I don't know if you guys have seen the photos of Angus Crichton that have come out recently, and he's got this little goatee thing that makes him look like a French bread maker. even though he's got a silly little goatee, there's no doubt that he's just an awesome fantasy player. 833K in 13.3% of teams with a break even of 62. Ryan, tell me about Angus Crichton.
I mean, he's obviously outside of looking like a bloke that has a tweed jacket with patches sewn on the elbows nowadays. He's
absolutely. He's a pair of Birkenstocks.
Outside of that, he's an outright gun. We saw him last year. He averaged 65 across his second row starts for the Roosters last year. And, you know, coming into this season priced at 62, it's quite hard. It's quite easy to see why a lot of teams are opting to start with him. You know, he had a 40 at the start of the year before the introduction of the new rules. And outside of that, he didn't score below 50 when he started the second row. So.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what you're looking for from around one player, is somebody that you can get a bit of consistency from. Crichton's absolutely a captain option if you're going to start with him. And one of the things I told you I was going to shock you a couple of times today, and one of the things that I'm going to shock you with is I actually took Angus Crichton out of my team this morning.
What?
Yeah, I did. I actually have another guy, which I'm going to talk to you about later, who I have decided to bring in instead. But to be continued. The next guy on our list is somebody that, once again, I'm a little bit confused why they're owned by 14.8% of teams, and that's Stephen Crichton for the Panthers. 492K, break-even of 37, average 37 in his games at centre last year. No scores over 40 in the last five rounds, even though he scored two tries. Ryan, why is Stephen Crichton in 14.8% of teams?
That is the question I've been asking myself. I don't get it. He's a bloke that scored a lot of tries last year. You know, we say Lomax scored a lot of tries. Well, his try-scoring rate was 0.7. Crichton's was 0.8, which is similar to Pappenhausen in 2019. Like, is that something that's, you know, is he going to be able to replicate that this year? We've seen him struggle to score more than 30 with tries before. Obviously, he's also had a couple of big games, but, yeah, I don't know. He's someone that I'm not too keen on.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing to remember is that the Panthers just came off a record-breaking season. So, if anything, it's likely that Crichton's going to end up going backwards. Now, obviously, if he was to get the fullback jersey and or start taking over the goal-kicking, neither of which are likely to happen in round one, we're having a different conversation. But, you know, at the moment, what we're looking at is minimal to no upside, massive amounts of downside. Your best-case scenario, from what I can see, is he does exactly what he did last year, doesn't make any money and isn't scoring well enough to be a keeper. And I guess this actually leads us, interestingly, into the next player as well, because I'm sort of feeling a little bit similarly about this player. And you mentioned 80% try-scoring rates, which is exactly what this guy had. And that's Alexander Brimson at 667K, coming in 15.6% of teams, break-even of 50, average 51 at fullback with an 80% try-scoring rate. Can we realistically expect that Brimson's going to keep up that 80% try scoring rate?
I wouldn't suspect so. You know, if I'm holding that same standard to other players, it's not a very realistic try scoring rate. And trust me, like, you know that I'm a big AJ fan.
Oh, yeah. We are 100% a pro Brimson podcast.
Absolutely. I was one of the first on him last year. I bought him after his first game back, just before round 13, and he was just outstanding. He saved my year, basically, the amount of, you know, injuries in the back half of the year. But he's not one I'm looking at for this year, to start the year at least. He scored a lot of tries, had a lot of also like late bailouts, line breaks in garbage time as well. Trust me, I watched a lot of AJ last year. And yeah, I don't know. A lot of people, I think, are expecting the Titans to make a huge leap forward, and maybe that's where they're seeing some upside for Brimson, thinking, you know, he's going to take that next step forward. But
the Titans were awesome in from round 13 onwards last year. They were winning so many games. I just, you know, even if the Titans are awesome, he takes a step forward. But a step forward is being able to sustain that 80% try scoring, as far as I'm concerned. You know, you look at a guy like RTS as an example that we spoke about earlier. We're projecting him, even if his team comes 12th, to average 52, whereas Brimson, we're projecting him to average 51, and Brimson's 50K more. You know, if you got Brimson, I could absolutely see making a case to downgrade him to RTS and banking that 50K.
Yeah, I mean, not only did he have an 80% try scoring rate, he had a 70% try saver rate.
Oh, wow.
When are you
going to
see that again?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's pretty unsustainable, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, speaking of unsustainable, that probably leads us interestingly into our next guy, which is David Fusatua, 268K, owned by 15.8% of teams with a break even of 20. Ryan, are you ready for Fus facts?
You went those Fus facts.
Okay. The best fantasy season that David Fusatua has ever had was in 2018, where he scored 22 tries in 22 games and his average was 29.
Wow.
Oof.
Hashtag push facts.
Yeah. Also, have you ever heard of a guy called Ewan Aitken?
I am familiar, yes.
Okay. Now, if you've ever watched Ewan Aitken play and you're familiar with him, you realize that Ewan Aitken may be the worst ball-playing center in the entire history of rugby league. I have never seen Ewan Aitken pass a ball, not one time. I don't even think he passes the ball at training. I don't even think he's practiced passing the ball. He's like, if I got the ball, I'm running until I get tackled. I don't care. So if Fusatua happens to be outside Ewan Aitken, there is a chance that he might not even touch the ball this year outside of doing kick returns. He's not going to score 22 tries in 22 games. You know, that's the absolute best case scenario is Fusatua averages 29. I could not understand why anyone, like if you've got Fusatua and you're looking at Fusatua or Saab, get Saab and save the 20K. You know, at least there's a chance for some upside there. You know, the Fusatua's been around for ages. He's never going to be better. He's only going to get worse. He averaged like 22 last year in his wing starts. Just put him away. Just delete it. I would rather leave an empty spot on my roster than have Fusatua. And I'm not going to talk about...
Those were some hard push facts. That's it definitely scared.
Yeah. If you have Fusatua, take him out of your team right now before he infects everybody around him. Speaking of the Warriors, next guy on our list is also a Warrior. I'm a little bit more optimistic about him than I am about Fusatua, but that's not really a big compliment, is Ben Murdoch-Masila. Comes in at 405K, 16.6% ownership, break even of 30. We spoke about Murdoch-Masila in our last episode when we spoke about the Warriors, and honestly, the more that I think about him, the less excited that I am. We don't really have a lot of stats on Murdoch-Masila, and I can't really... I looked this morning and I can't get any decent Super League stats for him. So what I did is I had a bit of a look at some back row performances, just, you know, what does an average back rower do? So the information that we have is Murdoch-Masila is likely going to play on the edge. It sounds to me like he's going to come off the bench. And believe it or not, he actually wasn't a starter in first grade in Super League. He was off the bench in Super League. So, and do you know how old Ben Murdoch-Masila is?
I don't think he's young, but tell me.
He's 30. So we've got a 30-year-old bench edge back rower coming over from Super League to a team that we've got projected to finish probably around 12th, if not worse. He's going to play 60 minutes off the bench, best case scenario, an average back rower across the entire of the NRL when they play between 55 and 65 minutes, averages 38. He's currently priced at 30. In my opinion, his best case scenario, he succeeds in his role that he's going to get, which is about 60 minutes on the edge and averages 38. Is there any upside in there?
I mean, not that I can see. Obviously, we don't have a whole lot of info to go off outside of, you know, some those stats that you just laid out. He's not one that I'm willing to take a punt on. There's just so much uncertainty around that Warriors pack. Yeah.
And I mean, the big thing is they've got Tohu plays big minutes and Jazz plays big minutes and Katoa can play big minutes and Armau can play big minutes and Adam Fanua-Blake can play big minutes and Bunty Afoa can play big minutes. All these guys can play big minutes. It's not like they've got a team full of guys over there that are just going to play 20, 25 minutes and they're going to need 80 minutes every week from Murdoch-Masila. You know, he's just, I don't see any sense in starting with him. And there's a couple of guys not on this list. One of them's Jackson Ford and the other one's Keon Kolomatangi, both of which I would have miles in front of Masila personally. The next guy though comes in similarly priced and I am significantly more optimistic about him. And that's Jaden Brayley, 410K, owned by just under 18% of teams, priced at 31. Ryan, tell me about Brayley, what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's a very interesting prospect going into this year. We know that the Knights are looking for their 80-minute hooker, and he's one priced at only 31. If he does get that 80-minute role like we expect, he averages over 45 when he plays 80 minutes. So he's definitely one to keep an eye on. He's one that's been in my team since day dot. What about you, Mark?
Exact same. And sometimes the best thing to do when you're playing fantasy is use the KISS method. So that's the keep it simple, stupid method. And you're looking at a guy who's priced at 31, who averages 46 tackles per game. Don't overthink it. Put him in your team and build your other 20 players around that. You know, you don't need to try to reinvent the wheel or get tricky or whatever. He's coming off an ACL. Yes. Jaden Brayley is not an attacking player. He's not going to, you know, it's not like a James Tedesco coming off an ACL where you're worried about him, you know, his lateral movement not being 100%. He's going to make 45 to 50 tackles a game. That 45 tackles or 46 tackles isn't even based on the new rules. That's the old rules. He might average 50 tackles a game. You know, he could easily be a 50-point player this year. I don't think he's going to be a keeper even at 50 points just because of the new sort of thresholds of where we rate what a keeper is these days. But, you know, there's no reason why he can't get up to 650, 700K this year. I don't understand why 82.1% of teams don't have him. So, you know, I definitely, if you don't have Jaden Brayley, I'd be looking for a way to get him in like straight away. The next guy though, also a hooker, owned by 18% of teams, Harry Grant, 823K. So that's a break even of 61. Now, I actually have a really interesting, well, I think it's interesting, but a really interesting fact about Harry Grant. Ryan, are you ready?
I'm always ready for your interesting facts, Mark.
All right. So Harry Grant, when he played 80 minutes in 2020, his average was 61 and he's priced at 61. But when Harry Grant played 60 minutes on average, or less than 80, but at least 60, he actually averaged more points.
That is interesting. What was his... So he was 61 when not playing.
He averaged 63 in 60 minutes, but 60 in 80 minutes. Now, there is some try scoring, you know, discrepancies there, which is where it's come from is, you know, in the six games where he played between 60 and 75 minutes, he actually scored 3 tries. Whereas in the games where he played 80 minutes, which was about 15 games or something, he only scored 1 try. So psychologically, I actually think what Harry Grant does when he plays is if he knows he's going to be playing 80 minutes, I think he intentionally conserves himself in maybe his running game and that sort of thing. And his try scoring actually drops off. Whereas if he knows he's only got to go hard for 60 minutes, he just throws himself into it. And actually by virtue of his work rate being higher, he actually averages more points in 20 less minutes.
So you're saying that cheese being on the bench might actually be good for his minutes?
Yeah. His scoring. Ideally, what you're looking for is Harry Grant to be playing about 65 minutes with Cheese playing a mix of lock and spelling him for 15 minutes, maybe through the middle. But what that'll allow Harry Grant to do is just absolutely throw himself into the match. And, you know, we know that Melbourne's a better team than the West Tigers. And in fairness, that's not a very high bar to set. Sorry, Tigers fans. But, you know, there's a possibility that Harry Grant's best role for Melbourne might be a 65-minute guy who... is able to just absolutely go balls to the wall for 65 minutes. And he might average 67, 68 points in 65 minutes. If we look at what he did at the Tigers, which was 63 in 60 minutes, depending on what the reports are around what Grant's role is going to be. I actually think if that 18% of people there, I would almost guarantee that they don't know that stat. And he would be what I would call, He might become a pod, but actually become a better option when people jump off him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, somewhat. So you're saying maybe towards the end of the year after Origin, when people are starting to jump off.
Oh, no, I mean like round one. So what happens is before round one, the trial happens, whatever. Brandon Smith spends some time at hooker and they say, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to have the boys share the hooker role. And, you know, Cheese is going to play a little bit of hooker just to spell Harry and whatever, or guarantee all of those people jump off him because they think he's going to be an 80-minute guy, not knowing that, in fact, he actually averages more when he plays that reduced role. So that number might drop from 18% down to 7 or 8% because this 10% of people that are starting with Grant panic about his role. But in fact, the guys that have stayed on are the ones that actually know that he's better in that role.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's a little fun theory for the day. But yeah, so Harry Grant, let's wait and see what his role is. I'd be more inclined to get him if I found out that Cheese is going to be taking a bit of his minutes based on the numbers. But I mean, obviously the try scoring is skewing that, but what we saw in his Q Cup stats is he scores a lot of tries. So this is not a new thing. He just used to absolutely dominate, and that's only based on 50 or 60 kick meters as well. So, you know, there's some upside there because Cam Smith usually kicks for about 100 meters. So, you know, there is some upside there with kick meters and playmaking as well with Grant, obviously between the Tigers and the Storm. But, you know, I think we spent enough time on Grant. So I'm going to move on to the next guy who is actually a Tiger this year, which is James Roberts. So 336K, owned by 18.1% of teams, priced at 25. I am the president, founder, and CEO of the James Roberts 2021 Fantasy Fan Club. I think that Roberts needs to be in every single team. Yes, he presents some injury risks, but also I don't feel like there's any players that give you the upside for the just such a low price here. Like, you know, and in the tough position in center, you know, he's similar to me. Like, I'm looking at him the way that I looked at Lomax last year. You know, everyone said to me, oh, Lomax sucks, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, yeah, but, you know, he's got the upside and he's cheap. You know, Lomax was 310K last year or whatever he was, and he ended up at 600 and something. You know, and everyone's go, oh, yeah, he's going to get moved around, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, every player has risks that ends up at 336K. There's no doubt about that. But as we've sort of discussed already about him, his worst case scenario really, as long as he actually stays on the park for 80 minutes, is an average of 35.
Yeah, we discussed him last week, and I think he's close to a must-have. Like his worst season, like you said, he averaged 35. That's 10 points of value right there in a position that's hard to fill. Like he seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, and I mean, his upside is 43, 44. You know, we heard Adam Dewey say that he's going to try to get them the ball, early ball more. You know, James Roberts' early ball is like I think he sits at home and dreams about receiving early ball from his halves. So, you know, if he can get in some space and create some opportunities, we could be looking at the guy who finishes as the number one center this year, potentially, and you're paying 336K for him. Now, you know, odds on he's going to get injured because he has gotten injured a bunch of times, but he might not. But the risk to reward's there for me. Similarly, there's another guy here who we don't actually have a lot of information on, and that's Jordan Rickey. So Jordan Rickey sounds like he is in a two-way battle for the edge back row spot that's vacant at the Broncos. And they actually spoke about another guy, Keenan Pelagia, as well. I think I've pronounced that name right. And he's actually a 228K guy. And Terry Madison, the Broncos assistant coach, actually specifically mentioned his name as well as competing with Rickey. So I think win-win in terms of those two, but you know, we think Ricky's going to get the spot. Owned by 18.6% of teams, break even at 26. We don't have a lot of stats on him, and even his Q Cup stats, he swapped between the wing, back row, lock, off the bench. His points per minute looks to be somewhere between 0.55 and 0.6. But I think with Rickey, similar to sort of what we spoke about with Brayley, you've just got to sort of keep it simple and use the eye test a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, if he's starting at that price as well, priced at only 26, from what we've seen of him, it's a hard one to pass up.
Yeah, worst case scenario, everybody has him. So it's not like you're going to be stuck on a pod at, you know, 2% or whatever that's sucking. You know, he's going to suck for every single person that has him. But I think the downside is he gets put on the bench and keeps averaging about 25, 26. But, you know, realistically, what we've seen from Rickey is he's a big athletic young guy who's only going to get better, and he's just absolutely he could easily be one of the premier back rowers in the game if his athleticism matches up with his skill, and hopefully the Broncos can be a little bit better this year. Seemingly the opposite of Jordan Rickey would be a guy who is super duper consistent but has minimal to no upside, and I can't think of anybody that fits this better than Cameron McInnes to start this season. So Cameron McInnes comes in as the second most expensive player in the game, only 1K more, 1K less than Nathan Cleary, priced at 73 points, averaged 73 last year, averages 73 at hooker. He's a great player, no doubt. Where's the upside?
Yeah, it's tough to find any. We discussed this during our Dragons, breakdown. And it's we've struggled to find really any upside. Where is he going to improve on last year? Usually, most of these guys that are priced in the upper echelons always have at least one bad game where it sends their break even sky high, and their price eventually comes down a little bit. I guess people just want to pay for that consistent captaincy option, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's a big chunk of your salary cap.
You're talking about basically 10% is your salary cap on a guy that doesn't really have any upside and has a massive downside now that he's signed with another team for next year. You know, they've got guys in their ranks that can play hooker. They're trying to get bloody Nathan Peets or Andrew McCulloch or any other hooker they can find who's not as good as McInnes to come and play hooker for some reason. I don't really understand why anybody would start with him. I think he's a better starting option than what Payne Haas is, but I think you can get similar scoring out of a couple of other guys that are significantly cheaper than McInnes. Not identical scoring, 73 is a big ask, but you could get a guy who can average mid to high 60s for 150K less. The next guy is absolutely not going to average 73, and that is Matt Moylan. So Matt Moylan comes in at 310K in 19.4% of teams, break even at 23. Now, Ryan, do you know how old Matt Moylan is? Young Matt Moylan, as they call him on Fox.
He's perennially young Matt Moylan. Please tell me, how old is Matt?
Young Matt Moylan is going to have his 30th birthday in June this year.
Oof.
Yeah. So he is not young Matt Moylan. He is middle-aged Matt Moylan. He's crusty Matt Moylan. So I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, when Moise came onto the scene in his youth, when he actually was young. 2015, 2016 at fullback averaged 43 and 40 points and would seemingly look to be a great option. 2017, he averaged in the 30s. So we've got, hang on, just follow me here for a minute. 2015, 43, 2016, 40, 2017, 38, 2018, 33, and hasn't averaged more than 33 across 19 and 20 at fullback. So we've got a guy who is young, scoring really well. As he's aged, got more injuries, he started sucking. And it's been 4 years since he put up 10 points of value. Talk to me about Matt Moylan at 19.4%.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were, obviously he's quite cheap. I think a lot of people were banking on him grabbing the goal kicking for round one and seeing maybe that's where, the 10 points of value comes from.
Yeah. So the latest reports on Sean Johnson is he's going to play round one, or he's going to be pushing to try and play round one. So he's not far off.
Yeah. So
full training, running on the field at the moment. And we've still got over a month until start of the season.
Yeah. Cause I was banking on having either Moylan or Chad Townsend based on whoever got the goal kicking round one. And that was with the initial expectations that Sean Johnson would be out for the first 2 months of the season. Now with the talk that he'll be back, if not round one, within the first month of the year, I've aborted those plans, get them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And Moylan is injury prone. He's not what you would consider a prototypical good fantasy player. He's more, he's like a wish version of Darren Lockyer. Does that make sense?
Like, what an analogy.
And he turns up in the box and you're like, this isn't Darren Lockyer. It's just, he's a good NRL player when he's on the park, but he's not a good fantasy player. He doesn't break tackles, doesn't run a lot of meters. He's usually the second last pass for the tries. He does absolutely nothing for me. And I think I was pretty complimentary of Moylan in our original podcast, but the more I look at him, I can't do it. I'm almost as excited about Moylan as I am about Fusatua. The next guy, though, is almost the anti-Moylan, and that's Ryan Pappenhausen. So he comes in at 658K, over 20% ownership, break even of 49. Now, Ryan, you're a bit of a Papp fan, and I think succinctly, I think where we landed was in the first eight games of last year, he averaged 43, and in the second eight games of last year, he averaged 55, excluding the goal kicking. So are we seeing, which Pappenhausen are we seeing? Are we seeing Jekyll or Hyde this year?
I, like we spoke about in our first episode, I expect he's going to take a huge leap forward. The way Melbourne used him in the first, you know, 10 so rounds of 2020 versus how they used him in the back half of the year changed completely. Like his role in terms of within the opposition 20, he started getting a lot more ball playing opportunity, and saw his try assists go up, and his attacking stats near the goal line increase quite significantly. He's one I'm very excited about. I think he is a decent shout for the Dally M this year as well.
Okay. Will strongly disagree with that, because I don't think there's any way that if it's a Melbourne player, it's Munster.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like I think it's if there's a Dally M winner coming out of both of those out of those teams, it'd be either him or Munster.
But then you've got Harry Grant there as well, you know, and this is the thing.
Yeah.
The question for me is, how does Melbourne change? Like you said, you know, Melbourne adapted their game last year based on the players that they had and what they needed to do. Cameron Smith and Harry Grant almost couldn't be any more different at the moment. You know, prime Cameron Smith, absolutely. But, you know, you're looking at a team now that is just going to be run by – it's going to be run by Munster and Harry Grant, and then Pappenhausen's going to be obviously the chime in. He's the Billy Slater to the Smith and Kronk or whatever. But I think if I had to choose between Pappenhausen, Brimson, and Tuivasa-Sheck, I'd probably go Pappenhausen. You know, that's where I'm at, but I'm not overly excited about any of them, you know, for me. Like I can see it, absolutely. You know, I think you'll get similar production out of Pappenhausen than you will out of Turbo, except the difference is 200K. You know, if you're looking at the question for me is, you know, you look at Pappenhausen and you look at a guy like Valentine Holmes, who's not on this list, you know, you got 160K you're paying to go from Holmes to Pappenhausen. Pappenhausen, he might goal kick, whereas we're 99% sure that Holmes is going to goal kick. You know, Holmes sucked last year. There's only upswing for that. Whereas, you know, Pappenhausen, we saw his role change, but, you know, he also had a couple of lay down misers in that last eight games. He also did play four top eight sides as well. So, you know, realistically, I think, you know, similar to what we're projecting for Brimson and Sheck, you can expect somewhere between 50 and 55 is my sort of, you know, projection, but he's already priced at 49. So that's where, you know, I have an issue of, is there going to be a value there?
Yeah, no, and for the most part, I do agree with that assessment. Like, I think he's going to, if he's not goal kicking, I think he's going to average between, you know, in that low 50s to about 55-ish. So he's not in my team currently, as high as I am on him.
Mate, you were telling me Pappenhausen was the greatest thing since sliced bread a couple of weeks ago. And now you're telling me you don't even have him in your team.
I just want to see his goal kicking.
Did you just take him out after we've been accused that we agreed to?
No.
I just told you, and while I was talking, you just went and took him out of your team.
Well, I want to ask, you say with Grant in the team that his role might change. Do you not think there might be a little bit more attacking opportunity with Grant in the team? You know, considering Cameron Smith always liked to turn the ball back inside of the forwards and work over the middle, and, you know, he would control a lot of that, you know, attack. Do you think maybe with Grant there, Pappenhausen might actually get a little bit more opportunity?
Mate, it's entirely possible, but once again, it's do we think this might happen versus 130K less, and do we think Holmes is going to go back to what he was before he went over to the Jets? You know, they got Todd Payton there, who had the Warriors absolutely frothing last year. All reports out of the Cowboys is you know, they're all super lean and they're just, you know, absolutely training that they're not just training the house down, they're training the entire new stadium down. And I don't understand why anyone would pay an extra 160K to gamble on Pap, you know, when that extra 160K might be the difference between having Jack Hetherington and having a guy who isn't sucking. That's what sort of my thing is, you know, if you don't have a good place to spend your 150K, sure. But, you know, I think if the best you can come up with is a couple of points potentially more. Well, I guess what the thing with going from a Holmes to a Pappenhausen is we've seen that Pappenhausen's floor and his ceiling aren't that far apart in terms of the season-long average. Pappenhausen's still young in the prime of his career. There's a chance that he might actually get better. You know, and like you said, you know, his ceiling's probably 60, you know, whereas Holmes, there are a lot more questions there. So it just, I guess, depends on your risk tolerance and what else you can do with that 160K. But, I mean, yeah.
Well, if we know he's goal kicking for round one, what's your opinion on him?
Oh, if he's goal kicking for round one, I'll have him in.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think it agrees them, despite the amount of shouting we've had at each other.
Right, I just wanted to disagree with you about something, all right? I'm feeling self-conscious about the fact that we agree too much on
things. There's 3 week fullback spots. You're allowed to have Valentine Holmes, mate. It's all right. Okay.
Actually, I'm doing what you did. I don't have Holmes on my team at the moment. but anyway, moving right along, the next guy I'm sure we probably will agree on, and that's Jack Bird. So Jack Bird comes in 374K, 20.8% ownership, break even at 28, fresh off his ACL injury, fresh off before that, the shoulder injury, barely been on the field for a couple of years, in 21% of teams almost. Ryan, talk me through Jack Bird.
In my notes of Jack Bird, I've got one word written, and it's just the board. Especially with the news coming out as well, we don't think he's actually going to be starting at Sale. We think he's going to be coming off the bench. So that adds even more uncertainty as to how many minutes is he going to be playing and what's his role.
The two words that I have written next to him on my sheet here is Black Widow. So yeah. Obviously Mitch Orbison's retired and he's been reborn in the form of Darkhead Mitch Orbison with a mullet. They're essentially going to be the same guy. Jack Bird, they've talked about using him in the back row. They've talked about using him at lock, 5'8", whatever. All that amounts to is nothing that's predictable. And in fantasy, as a most part, we like predictable. I don't see why anyone should have Bird at the moment. Now, his upside is maybe he comes off the bench and does what Peachy did last year. And like Peachy was awesome when he was playing that lock roll off the bench. But, you know, Peachy hasn't really had any injury concerns to speak of. And we sort of knew that that was coming and we were able to buy that. Whereas, you know, we don't really have that from Jack Bird at the moment. You know, you look at two guys that are on this list here, James Roberts and Jake Averillo. That seems to me like a pretty clear, obvious center pairing to start with. And there's no need to take a risk on Jack Bird. The next guy on our list is James Tedesco, priced at 850K, 20.9% ownership and a break even of 63 coming into the season. Now, Ryan, one of the other hammers that I wanted to drop on you, I said I was going to do, is the player that I put into my team for Angus Crichton is James Tedesco.
No.
Yes. Now, let me tell you.
He's no good.
Yes, I was. And let me tell you why. And sometimes it's important to go back and check your process. And you talk about player bias and you know, like I've been around fantasy for a while now, not as long as some people, but you know, I know what James Tedesco is. He is the best wing fullback option. He is just absolutely, you own him. You never have to, you know, worry about trying to get him in there. At some point, you need to have James Tedesco on your team, right? He's going to play Origin. We know that. He had a really good season last year. We know that. But did you know that James Tedesco actually averaged 69 points with the new rules, but he's coming in priced at 63?
That is quite interesting. I remember the stat you told me last week, though, when you said, you know, he scored over 100 three times, over 90 once, but under 55 times. Is that, have you forgotten about that? Or are you just...
No, I haven't forgotten about it, but... How many wing fullbacks are never going to score under 50?
That's a good point.
Correct. So what my process is, you know, I'm going to get Teddy and I took Crichton out. So we have Crichton projected for about 65 points, priced at 62. Teddy averaged 69, priced at 63. So for that extra 17K, I'm getting 4 points of value, theoretically extra. So three sort of on top. But also they're both going to play State of Origin and we don't necessarily like, you know, we know that Crichton has room to grow from 65, but we know what Teddy is. Plus, you know, Crichton's not essential. Like I've now got Ryan Madison and Dave Fifita sitting in my edge spot. So it's not like I'm running short of edge back rowers, but it means that I can, you know, not have to rely on, you know, I'd ideally like to fit both Crichton and Tedesco in, but I just can't squeeze it salary cap wise. So you know, I've made that trade off and gone down to Maddo, who I think has a similar sort of upside to Crichton, but you know, I can also have Tedesco this way. And there's Tedesco and the next guy on our list as well. And I sort of want to talk about them together because I mean, Tomalolo is the other one. He's the next one on the list at 827K and 21% ownership, priced at 62. They're a little bit like that, what we were talking about with Harry Grant earlier, but in a different way. So follow me here. Somebody raised this to me yesterday. So shout out to my younger brother, Peter. Tamalolo is a big name. He's always high ownership. Everybody knows who he is. You know, to the casual fantasy operator, similar to Tedesco, the casual fantasy operator, the first thing they do is they go to their team and they plug Tedesco and Tamalolo into their team, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for the most part. Maybe like a Haas or a McInnes this year or Cleary.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, just the casual NRL fantasy fan, they go there, they whack Tamalolo in, they whack Tedesco in, never think about it again. The quote-unquote expert, such as myself, goes, oh, you know, I'm going to go and get a pod. I'm going to get Nathan Brown. I'm going to get Valentine Holmes. I'm not going to get James Tedesco and Tamalolo because everybody owns them, right? But the problem is that all of these quote-unquote smart fantasy players are doing the same thing. So that 20% ownership for Tedesco and Tamalolo, even though it's high ownership, most of the people that actually have them are teams that are not necessarily going to be at the top end of the quality ranks. So in fact, they actually become a pod by the fact that they're not being chosen by the so-called experts.
Interesting. So you're saying perhaps his ownership in the top 1,000 is a lot lower than what it is in the bottom 20,000 or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. So basically, even though, you know, by the end of the year, everybody's going to have Teddy, right now, a lot of the teams are going, oh, can't start with Teddy. He's already priced at 63. He's going to play State of Origin. I'll pick him up, you know, when he, you know, starts slow or whatever, or I'll nab him towards the end of the year. And I've got to get all this value into my team to start with. But, you know, we are blessed this year with a massive amount of options. If you can squeeze it, that you can fit these guys into your team, like Tamalolo doesn't play Origin, so you can just leave him there and for the entire year. But, you know, Teddy even, you know, the Roosters are, they don't have Cronk anymore. They're not going to have Cordner. They're going to be relying on Teddy. He might even be their captain this year. So he's going to be on the park. And even if he's not, even if he's on the park casually, he's going to be throwing up more points than most of the wing fullbacks, if not all of them. So yeah, that's my thought process. And at the moment I've got Teddy in as a top 1,000 pod, even though he's owned by 21% of people. So I thought that was good. And maybe that's wrong, but I think a lot of the teams that I'm looking at the moment don't have Teddy. I'm sure they'll all hear this podcast and immediately steal my pod. And maybe this is the classic double bluff where, in fact, I'm actually not getting Teddy. So if any of you people in the Fantasy Lounge are listening to this and you just agreed with everything I said and put Teddy into your team, I'm just kidding. He sucks. Take him out straight away. All right. So obviously we know what Lolo is. Lolo's awesome. Average 68.7 in 68 minutes in games that he played over 60 minutes. You have to anticipate that Todd Payton's going to want him to play at least 60 minutes a game. I think there's clear upside there. I've got the C on him at the moment. At 827K, I think he's pretty close to a no-brainer there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's been in my team since day one. He's got those two games from last year where he was on minutes restrictions, dragging his price down, which is perfect. Priced at 62, like you said. You know, averaged over 68 when playing 60 minutes. He averaged 66 when playing at least 50. So there's quite obviously upside.
Yep, cool. Moving along. Connor Watson, 323K, 21.6% of teams, price at 24. How are you going about trying to project Connor Watson?
Yeah, good question. It's a hard one. I've sort of got him in the mould similar to what Tyrone Peachy was like at last year. Mm-hmm. I think he might have some games where, you know, he only scores in the high 20s, low 30s, but then he'll have other games where he's, you know, panning out 50 pluses quite easily and priced at 24, playing in the middle. He seems like one that's got to be in just about every team for mine.
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I actually haven't been able to squeeze him in just with my tight budget with my recent Tedesco purchase. So I'm trying to work out a way that I can get him back in. So stay tuned. I think come round one, I'll definitely have him. It's just a matter of how I'm going to actually get him in. Because, I mean, I'm looking here. I've got him projected to average 41, which is a 17-point bump on his price. You'd sort of be crazy not to get him. So I think, assuming that he actually ends up landing this lock roll that we think he's going to land, he seems like a no-brainer. Another guy who's pretty popular is Cameron Munster at 671K, 22.7% ownership, comes in priced at 50. Munster's one of the first guys that I put into my team. I think even without goal kicking, there's a chance that he might end up averaging 60 this year. So he averaged 56 in his games where he managed to make it through the 80 minutes last year, which also includes a 38 that he played, obviously not at 100%. Obviously, a lot of people understand this process that I've gone through because he's owned by almost a quarter of the teams. Where are you on Munster?
Yeah, he's another one that's been in my team since day dot. I've currently got a blank picture of a half sitting next to him. I've been struggling to fill that other spot, but Munster's been there since day one for the same reasons that you just laid out there. If he grabs the goal kicking, it'd be huge. Yeah, I think he's a trainer.
Yep. Sean Bloor, 246K in just under a quarter of teams at 24.5%. 18 break even off a 246K start price. He actually doesn't really fill me with a massive amount of confidence now that I go back and look at him, if I'm being honest. His Q Cup stats, and there isn't a lot to go on. The word that I would use to describe what I read was he's more than likely lazy.
Interesting. So what, a low PPM?
Or? Yeah, it was like 0.5 or something like that. And there was just some absolute, like, there's just not a lot there. You know, like it was like 80 run meters and 25 tackles. Like it wasn't a good, it didn't fill me with a lot of confidence. So, you know, even if he starts, we're looking at a 60 to 80 minute edge roll. I have him projected to score in the low 30s if he gets a 60 minute edge roll. Okay. Based on that.
Do you think maybe like those New South Wales Cup stats might have just been maybe a bit of immaturity? Like he is fairly young. I think he turns 21 this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's entirely possible, and most young people are lazy, as we know, because we're not young anymore, but we were lazy when we were younger, or at least I was. So it's definitely possible that I'm judging him too harshly, but at the moment I'm looking at Bloor thinking that he's a perfect sort of 18th or 19th man rather than somebody that I'd want to have in my scoring 17 until we know what he's like. I mean, obviously, if he gets an 80-minute edge back row roll and he's pumping out 40-somethings, then he'll find his way pretty quickly into my scoring 17. But the worst thing, you rely too much on a guy who's 246K and he doesn't actually provide you with good scores. Obviously, if he's scoring 30, sitting in number 18 in the emergencies, is going to tick over the price rises and, you know, he gets a try or something and it kicks him along nicely. That's sort of my look at him. I certainly wouldn't want to be having him in my 17 scoring players for round one, even if he's starting, I don't think. Next guy on the list, I don't think will be on this list very long. That's Corey Harawira-Naera, 310K, priced at 23 break even, 25.4% owned. You see, we know Corey has just been done for a high range drink driving charge. So he's on the fast track to a couple of rounds off to start the year. Obviously, we'll anticipate that percentage ownership will go down significantly. Speaking of troublemakers, Dave Fifita is the next one on our list. Obviously, we know he had a bit of a mixed bag season last year between, you know, being pretty good on the field, some silly stuff off the field beforehand and some injuries, which sort of had him out after he, you know, got his knee scoped or whatever. And the Broncos obviously didn't play very well. So he comes in at 710K, 26% ownership, 53 break even, averaged 55 in his 80-minute back row starts. So 58, but that had 3 tries in the 8 games though. So I think with Fifita, it's one of those things where you just got to sort of trust the eye test.
Yeah, I think so. We know he's a big attacking edge, edge player. Yeah. Career 80-minute average of 59, priced at 53. You know, obviously, we saw that average go down a little bit last year. That might have been just because the Broncos weren't very good last year as well. I know a lot of people expecting the Titans to go well this year, so maybe, you know, he can get back to close to that 60 average.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the first 2 games of the year, not in the new rules, his 2 scores were a 58 and a 70 something. So that was when the Broncos won the first 2 games before they forgot what they were doing. But definitely. I think that's one of those guys where, like, projections wise, I'm looking at him and I like, if you took the name off it and took any of the film around it and just said, oh, there's a guy here, 710K, price at 53, average 58, I'll be like, I'm not really that excited about that. But, you know, I've seen Fifita and I think his upside's worth that. Not ignoring the numbers, but understanding what the numbers mean. Another guy who is in 26.5% of teams for good reasons. Jacob Little at 304K, 23 break even, coming off a string of injuries, playing a little bit of time off the bench because obviously they had Harry Grant there last year. Little looks to be the obvious candidate for the number 9 jersey. What I've got written next to him is seems like a no-brainer. is there anything more to add to that?
No, I agree. Like his PPM is quite good. I think he only needs at least 50 minutes a week for 10 points of value. So even if there is a bench, he'll go. I think he's value.
I think his average was like 48 in his games where he played at least 40 minutes at like, you know, 55 or 48 points or something. Like he's an attacking hooker. He's good. You know, he's a good young player. He's been really unlucky with injuries. And let's cross our fingers and hope that he stays fit. And then if he doesn't, we get Jake Simpkin, who is way cheaper again than him. So worst case scenario, we get even cheaper hooker at the Tigers if something happens to Little. Next guy on the list, also really cheap, also in lots of teams, 28%. Tessie New, only got the wing fullback availability at the moment. We're expecting him to be named at center and get the dual position status before round one. His Q Cup stats don't fill me with confidence. Seven starts at center for an average of 29 with four tries. It is an area of concern, but also it's sort of what we've seen from him in the NRL has been pretty good.
Yeah, I have the same notes basically written to what you laid out. Like his Q Cup stats are concerning, but he showed glimpses of brilliance at fullback last year. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to think about him.
He is pretty far away from being considered a slam dunk, but I think you sort of just need to go, you know, look at him and go, all right, I'm rolling the dice on the center position here. And it might be that you've got Bailey Simonson and you've got Tessie in your wing fullback spot, and you got to pick one to play every week based on their matchups. Maybe that's the way you need to go. So, you know, you look at round one, the Broncos are playing the Eels and the Raiders are playing the Tigers. So you might plug Simonson into your starters and put Tessie on the bench or something like that. You know, like that might be the way you need to do it, or just have him in your emergencies is the other option. But I think that sort of makes it a little bit difficult in terms of team construction. So I've found that the best option for me is if I can get Turbo, another elite or potentially elite wing fullback, and then I have a Tessie in the back three, it gives me a lot more options through the rest of my team. Would you feel confident starting him?
Oh, I don't know if confidence is the right word.
Are you willing to?
If I'm in a pinch, I would be willing to. Like I said, he did show glimpses of ability last year at fullback. That said, you know, center less opportunity in the team that coming off a pretty poor year, I wouldn't want to. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly not excited about it, but I think you sort of just need to have him, and you just need to make a decision as to whether he's going to be in your starters or he's going to be in your emergencies. And if people roll the dice and go the wrong way with that, then, you know, that'll be just something that we'll have to deal with. But I think at 263K or whatever he is, you can take a risk there. One guy who is certainly not a risk is Nathan Cleary. Nathan Cleary comes in as the most expensive player, 973,000, 29.3% ownership, break even of 73, average 72 point something last year. I've got here good anchor player and looks set for another year, good year, but what's the cost of having that?
Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. You know, obviously he's probably one of the best captaincy options going this year, but I don't see a whole lot of value. Actually, you know, I was looking at the difference between him and Tedesco, and because I was thinking about what you said last week about how Teddy, you know, he scored 100 three times, 90 once. So Cleary was sort of similar. He scored 100 twice and 90 twice.
Yeah.
But unlike Teddy, he scored below 50 twice. So I don't know. Maybe you're paying for that consistency. You know, he's got quite a high floor and a very high ceiling. Maybe people have just got too much cash left over.
Yeah, well, and maybe that's true. You compare Tomalolo and Cleary, 150K difference. We've got Tomalolo projected for 3 points less than Cleary. So for that 6 points with the C on you, you know, what's that costing you in terms of that 150K? You know, if I'm spending 150K, like, you know, that's the difference in going from, say, a guy like Jai Arrow up to, a Nathan Brown or something like that, or going from a Luke Brooks to a Cameron Munster. That seems to me like, you know, a pretty good option. So, I mean, you know, everybody's, it really comes back to team composition. If you can afford to buy Cleary and just keep him in your team, similar to what Teddy is, but I think a lot of people are making an educated decision with Cleary to just go, you know what, I need that guy who I'm, he's 10 points better than every other player in his position, like Teddy is, you know, we're just going to do that round one. But there sort of seems a limited amount of players that you can actually do that with. So I've just found, you know, if I'm starting to spend 900 and something thousand on somebody, it takes away from somewhere else on my team. And I'm not sure I'm willing to do that. It's more of a strategy thing than a right or wrong thing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're not going to go wrong with Cleary in your team. It's just, you know, are you willing to spend that much money to compromise other positions?
Correct. Next guy, you're not going to have to spend very much money on at all. That's Jake Averillo. Comes in at 302,000. Dual position half center. Looks like getting the 5'8 jersey for the Doggies. 29.6% of teams. No brainer?
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at his 2.58 starts last year and it actually didn't fill me with a whole lot of confidence, to be honest. In his two starts, he averaged 36 kick meters. So he's going to be one that's relying on attacking stats. And in one of those games where he scored 34 in 80 minutes, he had 8 points worth of goal kicking, which we expect to disappear with the addition of Kyle Flanagan.
Yep.
He seems like a player that's going to be relying on him getting attacking stats and not missing tackles for mine.
Okay. And I mean, he's probably something like a Jerome Luai style. That's his up, like his sort of ceiling. The floor being Matt Moylan. So, I mean, at 302K, I think you got to take a risk with the center availability.
Yeah, exactly. He's not much of a risk. So that price, you know.
Yep. Absolutely. And I mean, everybody's going to have him, you know, he's at 30%. He probably should be 100. So we'll wait and see. I think that'll probably go up as people realize that they need to own him. The next guy is going to upset a lot of people, I think. And he's the second most owned player in the game at the moment. And that's Tino Fasua Malawi, 574K, 33.5% ownership. So over one third of the teams have him. Break even of 43. Ryan, I have him projected for a maximum of 47 points, making him what I would suggest is a dud buy. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I know people say we might agree a little bit too much, but I'm with you here. I don't see it. I don't know why. Maybe people are just going off the eye test, see a big, big fella playing in a starting middle role now, but you know, last year his try scoring rate was 0.5, which to put that in perspective, you know, a gun middle like, say, a Haas or a Tamalolo, their try scoring rate's usually about 0.1, 0.2. Like Cleary's try scoring rate last year was 0.3. So you'd have to expect that to fall. He's only scored over 50 once without a try, and that was when he was playing in the second row for 80 minutes. So I don't see it. What's your thoughts?
Mate, well, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing an average of 46.4 in 54 minutes when he plays in the middle. Can you honestly tell me that you think he's going to get more than 54 minutes, like consistently? You know, you've got that Titans pack where you got two 80-minute edge back rowers in Fifita and Proctor. You got Tyrone Peachy, who is a quote-unquote utility, who's going to be playing lock for 45 to 50 minutes. There's a chance that Tino might actually go into the prop rotation, in which case he might be playing 45 minutes. You could be looking at paying 574K for a guy who's not even going to meet his break even. You know, if he plays 45 minutes at prop, he might only score 40 points a game. And you know what? What's the upside to this? Tell me what the pathway is for him averaging 50. I don't see it at all. You know, I just don't understand it. And I don't understand why people don't understand it.
Yeah. If someone's got a dissenting opinion, you can tell us why Tino is going to be an absolute gun this year. Please tell us on Facebook or Twitter, because I've been looking for dissenting opinions. Someone trying to, you know, give me a reason why Tino is going to be a great buy this year. And I just can't find it.
Absolutely. Right. You know, you look at options here. You know, I've got Connor Watson potentially averaging within 2 or 3 points of what Tino might average. And he's 250K less. You know, you're paying for a name and it just never works in fantasy. And it's buying Tino is a straight shot towards being outside the top 10,000 teams. You know, it's just, if you're buying Tino, your process is wrong. I would love somebody, like, if you can give me a good argument, like, message us on the page. If you can give me a good argument why Tino's a good buy, we'll bring you on the podcast next episode and you can explain to everybody why we're idiots. But I just don't, I don't see it. The last guy on the list who is currently the most owned player in fantasy and deservedly so is Tom Trbojevic. I don't think there's a massive amount to say on this one, but priced at 477K, almost 38% ownership, break even at 36. The last season where he had a decent sample size of 80-minute games, he averaged 53. That was before the new rules. Turbo could very well be the second best wing fullback this season behind Teddy, and priced at sub 500K seems to me like, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously the only reason why he's not 100% ownership is because of the injury history, but I don't think you can afford not to take the risk.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a must have. Like, the only concern with him is his injury history, but do you really want to be betting on a guy getting injured? Like, if that's your only justification for not having a player in your team, oh, I think he's going to get injured. Like, is that something you really want to stake your claim on? Like, especially when he's in so many teams, if he doesn't get injured and all of a sudden he's averaging, you know, 55 or something, you're left
you look
there,
like a moron.
You know, looking like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And because every other team has him, you know, even if he does get injured, you just trade him to Will Hoppawattie or James Roberts or somebody else around that same price bracket. But the upside is just way too big to risk. So I think that just about does us. I don't really want to harp on Turbo because he sort of seems a bit obvious. And, you know, if you're not buying him because of the injuries, then enjoy being outside the top 10,000. That about wraps us up for today. So I hope you enjoyed our episode and we look forward to bringing you some more content next week.
See you guys.